Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour. This is for April 20th, 2023, and I am going to try to get through this show with my voice is having some issues here. I've had this nagging kind of cough thing for a few weeks, and so anyway, I'm going to boost up my microphone sound here and hopefully get through this one-hour program. And here's an article that occurred in space.com. This is the, of course, NASA, rah-rah, zizz-boom-bah, everything great at NASA. But, of course, there's not a lot going on at NASA, so they're talking about other things. But here's an article that I just thought was rather comical. Here we have the Pentagon, it says, has no credible evidence of aliens or UFOs that defy physics. Now, what the heck does that mean? If you're a geek out there and you've been following the so-called Pentagon and military and intelligence agencies, which aren't so intelligent, but if you've been following this, there supposedly was going to be these dumps of information where you could go through that and... But to make an announcement that Pentagon has no credible evidence that defies the laws of physics. Now, when you get into outer space things, I would say that the so-called laws of physics probably would be much better on a movie like Star Trek than in real life, because it would assume this is something like Neil deGrasse Tyson would say, you know, based it on science, you know, the magical word that if you repeat it and you're in the inner circle, then that covers all bases. You don't have to say any more. But the laws of physics, now, let me understand this. Is somebody claiming that they know all of the laws of physics? Or is this limited to the batch of laws that somehow are bantered around in peer-reviewed journals, which are just pure garbage? You know, like the Dirty Snowball Comet model. Would that be considered a law of physics? Or the Chapman physics mantra that there are no electric fields in outer space or in the Earth's atmosphere? Is that a law of physics? Pretty bizarre. So I really don't know what they mean. I really have no idea what they mean. If they would have just said the first part, that the Pentagon has no information about aliens or UFOs, to say, okay, well, they're lying. But to add on that second part about the laws of physics is just, I mean, it's bizarre. It's a bizarre statement. How does anybody qualify or quantify that statement? And so anyway, going on to the next subject, as most of you probably know, I've spent a good part of my life trying to solve water and energy problems, or energy and water, really in that order. Because if you can solve energy problems, then you can also solve the water problems. Now, something that has been very much in the news over the past week is that the Pentagon came out, military, and they said that the offshore wind farms that are being planned along the east coast of the United States and the west coast of the United States are not compatible with military security issues. So this is a big deal, and what they're hoping is that all of these can be worked out. For example, there are offshore locations where the Navy practices their missile range, gunnery, shooting at targets, etc. And so anyway, they need live situations in the ocean to do this, and the Biden administration wants to put all of these energy fields of wind towers along the coast. And remember that these wind turbines, the entire issue is that they don't really get very big when you're talking about industrial level power. You know, a 4 or 6 megawatt or even a 7 or even a 10 megawatt wind turbine is really not very big, given that it's running maybe at around 20 to 30% efficiency. That's a really small amount of power for the amount of ecological damage that these things do. And of course, the issue is they don't just put in one or two, they put in hundreds and hundreds of them at extreme cost. And this is all a giant boondoggle, because these things literally do not work. This is a for-profit venture. And if you look at the history of the sale of three-blade wind turbines to installations, typically most of them break down within the first couple of years, and nobody goes out and replaces them, because what happens is the original installation group or investors sell it off within the first year. And then it goes out to a secondary contract, and sometimes they run it for a year or so and then sell it off again. So by the time these things are not working, they're sitting out there idle, nobody's there to repair them or take care of them or maintain them. The only level of power that makes any sense if you're doing offshore or even onshore, but primarily offshore, is something in the range of 100 to 200 megawatts. And of course, the three-blade wind turbines will never, ever in a million years produce that kind of power. They wouldn't have a registered nameplate level of power in that power range, let alone actually produce power in that power range. For those of you who are not familiar, nameplate means the rated output power of a wind turbine or solar system based on maximum production. So if somebody says a 4.7 megawatt wind turbine, that would be the maximum power that that unit could put out under ideal conditions. But they never run at nameplate value. But they'll always quote you at nameplate value, which is one of the biggest scams in the energy industry, where they only talk about installed base or how many houses could be powered by this equipment if it's running at a full 100%, which it really never is. Very rarely, maybe once in every 5 years, it would be running at full 100%. Over the course of months and weeks, people send me information. So people send me links to watch. And I watched one this week dealing with atmospheric water generators, something I happen to know quite a bit about. My finalist position in the Water Abundance X Prize was because of my product line of water from the air machines. They're sometimes loosely called, or atmospheric water generators. But I saw this video, and this guy was talking about how you could put these out over the ocean, and because the humidity above the ocean is relatively high, you could capture water, and that's not a new idea. He's making it sound like it's some kind of new radical idea. And a University of Illinois research team dealing with this, making calculations, and no, it's an excellent idea. But then he starts quoting prices, saying that a 350-gallon-per-day atmospheric water generator would be like $50,000. And I'm going, what? Wait a minute, Batman. $50,000? No. The ones I sell are like a third that price. So anyway, it's real common when you find people on the Internet, on YouTube especially, they're trying to be experts. They've done a little bit of research, usually enough to be dangerous. And then they give out this information, which is basically false. Okay, now I'm going to talk about electric vehicles and the electric vehicle industry here for a little bit. The basic problem, there are many problems with the EV industry. Batteries, longevity of the batteries, they burn. The batteries they're using, the lithium-ion batteries that are used in automobiles, can burn. Just a horrific situation, and this has not happened yet, but I suspect it's going to happen, where one of these babies self-ignites, where they short-circuit within the battery, starts to burn on something like a busy LA freeway, and the people in the cars next to them don't realize what's going on. But if you've ever been on one of these freeways, there's no place to run. You'd be lucky to get your car door open, let alone to get the kids out of the back seats and everything else. And so once one of these Tesla or other electric cars start going up in smoke on the freeway in a crowded situation, they're going to very quickly get the cars next to them burning, and then they're going to get the cars next to them burning. And this thing is going to spread because every one of these other cars has got a gas tank. And when the fire gets to those gas tanks, it's a matter of time until those babies go up in smoke. And then you're going to have some major explosions. And like I say, there's where do you run to? You know, if you got 2-3 kids in the car, how are you going to pick them up and try and run through this LA freeway jam traffic? But pick your favorite city, Miami, New York, LA, you know, Oakland, Seattle, pick your favorite city. And imagine one of these babies going up in flames on that crowded freeway. And what would you do if it was the car next to you? Because a lot of cars are going to burn before that thing gets out. And there's, you know, it would simply, it would be a horrific, horrific experience with a lot of people, I fear, would be killed because of this. So electric vehicles have their issues. But the biggest practical issue to implementing electric cars on a national scale is that the grid, the electric grid that delivers power to charge electric vehicles, is not capable of handling the amount of energy. Right now in the United States, just looking at the United States, we're not talking about China or India, which are massive users of energy, or the rest of the world, or Europe, which is another massive user of energy. But just the United States, 60% of the energy comes from what are incorrectly termed fossil fuels. And about 40% of that is coming from natural gas. This is what is producing electricity today. Nuclear is down around 17% of the total. So that's a significant amount to provide a baseline. So how do you replace these? This is really a difficult problem because the United States, in fact, the world cannot continue doing what it's been doing. This has got to come to an end. So the only other source of real energy now is wind. And so the issue here is that most people really don't understand the issue of wind, because the three-blade wind turbines have been presented as some kind of a savior, but of course they were never meant to work. Here's the issue. Is there enough wind on Earth? This is the big question. Is there enough wind that if we had an efficient way of capturing it, that would we would be able to produce the amount of electricity and first of all, replace petroleum that's used for gasoline and diesel vehicles. Every day in the United States, 360 million gallons of gasoline are consumed every day, and 135 million gallons of diesel fuel every day. This is between trains, trucks, and a few automobiles and smaller vehicles. But it's an immense amount of energy. First of all, we simply use too much energy. And some people say, well, our economy depends on it. Actually, no. Our economy doesn't depend on wasting fuel. So the hydrogen is going to be the upcoming fuel. It's simply the way it is. To get back to the original theme, there's not enough. Even if you could create enough electricity to convert automobiles to electric vehicles, you could not deliver that electricity on the current grid, and there's no plan of any type to expand the grid, grid system, and make more capacity. So simply put, as quoted by a lot of the foreign car makers, they realize that hydrogen is the only way to go. The other issue is simply the energy source itself. Hydrogen works well on heavy energy, high energy types of vehicles, such as work vehicles, long-haul tractor trailers, trains. Electricity does not. By the way, for example, a locomotive, what it does, when you see it going down the tracks, you see the diesel engines. What you actually hear are the diesel engines. And what they're doing is turning generators that generate electricity that go to the motors that drive the wheels. So the motors that drive the wheels are electric, not diesel, because electric has much more torque available and it works much better for a train. The same situation with big ships. I've been down in the bottom of big ships, and it's the same situation. You have diesel burning, a big diesel engine, which is turning a generator, creates electricity, and that electricity, therefore, is used to run the propellers of the boat. Now, to combine electricity with petroleum used for transportation, it turns out that the vast majority of electricity today is created using natural gas and diesel. Coal is going down as one of the main suppliers of electricity, and nuclear is remaining relatively stable. But I've said this before, we could completely eliminate the approximate 100 nuclear power plants simply by turning the light off in the other room, by using less energy just in an intelligent way. In a factory, turning off machines that are not running, a lot of the energy goes towards lighting, which has actually been reduced a great deal. But then we have to also include the increase in electrical usage as time goes on. We're always using more and more. But we have to understand that the vast majority of both transportation and electricity come from petroleum-based products. This is incredible. So understanding the inefficiencies in delivering electrical energy, then storing it in a battery for EV, for electric car transportation, understanding that electric vehicles are not good at high-powered industry types jobs like big road machines, like tractor trailers, or like other big machinery, the type of machines that do work in industry. Understanding that, then the conversion to some other energy source, the only thing left is hydrogen. Okay, so I'm going to leave this topic now, and it's something, of course, I'm working on in the background. The idea being that, very simply, yes, there is enough wind energy on planet Earth to supply us with energy every day for electric and for hydrogen. But the first thing we should do is convert from the petroleum being used for transportation. That would be the very first thing to do. But it requires wind energy systems of the 200 megawatt range. These little puny 7-8 megawatt three-blade wind turbines, simply just by putting thousands of these offshore, is going to cause a problem. The other thing with hydrogen production is that you do it offshore, but you don't have any of this cable issue, running the cables back to shore. And literally, once if they start building enough of these offshore wind farms for electricity and then trying to ship the energy back to the coastline, there is simply not enough capacity on the United States grid to move that electricity to the places where it would be needed for electric vehicles. So it's just simply a plan without a backbone. It's simply not going to work. So anyway, hopefully make that clear. That is why hydrogen is the only solution. I saw an article where they were touting that hydrogen did not succeed in the United States because of lack of filling stations. Well, that is poor government planning. If the government is going to become involved in transportation, then they should have people who are knowledgeable and provide the filling stations, the hydrogen filling stations, that then would be used by automobiles to expand the hydrogen market. But it appears that the car makers, the automakers in the United States, are pushing the agenda for the Democratic Party. And they really don't know what they're doing. But, of course, like anything American these days, the impetus is greed and profit. Okay, so now I'm going to go into, I have a list here, and I'm not sure how many are on my list here, but these are non-debatable facts. And unfortunately, a lot of this is turning into some kind of a political war of verbiage. And the problem is that people are taking words and then twisting them, and that's what you do when you try to destroy a civilization. If you go back to Babylon, remember Babylon was the country where they had all of these intellectual people that were talking all at the same time, and nobody could understand each other because they had changed the language. So that's the point. If you want, in the Communist Manifesto, one of the main things you do is you destroy the culture, you destroy the family, you destroy the language. Those are things that you do. And so now, the universities of today, I've taught in universities, and they were going downhill when I was teaching, which was decades ago. They were going downhill very fast at that point. And, for example, feminism was coming in, and it was growing heavily in the university because that's where women could, in a sense, be equal with men. They had a PhD, they had a degree, especially in the social sciences and humanitarian branches of endeavor. And so what they didn't count on was that was the hook. Feminism was the hook to destroy the family. And what you find now are women who are, for our elderly, they're past the point where they can have kids, going, I wish I wouldn't have done this because now I don't have anybody. They're alone. They're going, how did I get into this position? Well, they bought into feminism. But remember that feminism was just the first step in bringing in everything that's going on today. And I would like to make a point here that women, they say women want to be stronger than men or equal to men. And my viewpoint has always been that women are much stronger in a much more powerful position than men and always have been. And this is a simple fact that men are wired to take care of women, to support them. And there's a reason for this, because in the traditional roles, women would have children, and during those months when a woman is the childbearing months, the woman is less and less able to take care of herself and a lot of other things. So you need a man that can go out and take care of things and that is trustworthy, that's not messing around with other women and everything else that goes with it. They have to, they have to be, in a sense, become cooks. They have to become chief bottle washer in the kitchen. And the women, the closer they get to the birthing date, the less able they are to manage things just because of the physical burden of having a baby. And then it takes a while for them to recover. So that's the point, and that's where typically other women come in, other sisters and cousins and mothers and aunts, where they get support. But there are women, too, that have no support. But the idea that a woman would have no support, which happens occasionally, is very difficult to manage all of this by themselves. So the traditional role of the family, where the family is a unit, And even the kids that are existing, when there's a new baby on the way, have to step up to the plate and, in a sense, grow up, because there's more responsibility. You have to clean your room. There's not a, you know, the room service ends at 5, as they say. But here's another point that I've seen. And this is something, if you look at a woman carrying a baby, and I've seen this, I was just traveling and I would see this, and you always see the women carrying the baby, even when they're pretty big. And it's just literally a fact that men trying to carry a baby, they can't do it for very long. It's very difficult for them. But a woman can carry a baby for miles. And it's like, you know, no big deal. And so there's a lot of, you know, take a man, do this, and then imagine that he has to go through all this, the childbearing phenomena that a woman has to go through, including the delivery. Most men wouldn't make it. They wouldn't make it. They talk big. They're big, tough guys. But in deep down inside, they're like a powder puff. They're really not that, you know, in terms of pain and things like that. And I'm talking about most guys. It's just a simple fact. And so in those senses, women are far stronger than men in any respect. And so I don't buy the idea that women have to compete against men to be stronger than them. That's just, to me, it doesn't make sense. But my point is that the pendulum, and this happens many times with movements, with trends and things like that, that the feminist movement is now realizing that on their shoulders have been tacked all of these other things, all of these other movements. And women are going, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with this group's agenda. Yet they're piling it on the feminist movement. That was the entire point, was to get women to buy this feminism deal, hook, line, and sinker, that they're somehow downtrodden in society, etc. But let me just explain something, and I've seen a lot of smart women in my life. Very smart women understand that they have much more power if they accept the traditional role, because they get what they want. They, you know, the man can make decisions on various things, but when it comes down to the bottom line, 99% of the time, the women make the big decisions. Just simply the way it is. And that's in a balanced relationship. And the men will let them do that because the man's role is to go out and provide. And the idea is that this is a working relationship. It's not one in which one person is dominant. And there are situations where either the man or the woman are dominant irrationally. I'm not talking about those situations. I'm talking about sane, normal husband-wife family relationships. The woman is set up on a pedestal, makes the decisions, has to use her intuition, and a lot of times the woman's intuition far outweighs the man's logic. And the men have to understand this. And then there's situations where a man just says, okay, no, we're not going to do this. This is what we're going to do. And it's because of safety reasons or something like that. So a balanced relationship, the woman is really the one in charge. And so I'm going to state what I believe is an obvious fact, an apparent fact, and that is that women are stronger than men. Now, just a little caveat here. The highest number of gun sales in the United States over the last 5 years has been to women who are mothers. Mothers in families or single parents, the highest volume of gun sales is going to women. What does that tell you? That women are out there, they're going to protect their family. If you go into the woods, if you go in, like, say, the culture of bears, for example, when the mother is with the cubs, you do not want to get between the mother and her cubs. you can be off in the distance, she'll got an eye on you, and then you walk away, okay, you're good to go. But you get between that, even if by accident, you get between that mother and the cubs, there is going to be hell to pay. And the mother bear, believe me, is like a 300 or 400 pound mouse. You know, they are very strong, extremely strong. And that's another good example of just the way the mothers react in the animal kingdom. And that's true also if you go amongst any other animal species. You get between the mother and the babies, you are going to have a problem. And it's not so much the fathers that are doing that. My clear analysis after many, many decades on this planet is that the women are far stronger than the men. And I'm not talking about running in a 100-yard dash or lifting barbells or swimming competitions or tennis. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking in general, in life situations. This is what I call number one, a non-debatable fact. Okay, number two, there are two genders. Now, people are trying to run around and change the dictionary and, create all kinds of new terms and hundreds of new genders, etc. But no, a non-debatable fact is that there are two genders. And if people want to create another name for something that they've invented in their mind, have at it. The English language is a fluid language. But what's going on today is that people are taking traditional terms and changing them, and the liberal-minded mother take care of my dog attitude of liberal college students is that they can be whatever they want. Now, you got to understand, these kids are coming out of a home. This is their first role at independence, of being out of the house, of being an independent person. They go to college. I call it advanced babysitting. That's what it is. They're experimenting. They're learning. They're in an environment that allows free thinking. And all of a sudden, they know everything in the world. There are two genders in all of the species on planet Earth, etc. Now, the purpose of having two genders in the design of the universe is to procreate life. So the individual can duplicate, and it's really called the miracle of life. So to take that and somehow turn it into something that is just for a good time is, or to, for example, use birth control as a method of, abortion as a method of birth control, in my view, is tainted. And then when a woman comes up with an unwanted pregnancy, she argues that she should be responsible for her body and that it is her choice to end the pregnancy, when it was her bad decision, her bad, irresponsible behavior that provided the unwanted pregnancy in the first place. Now, by the time you get old enough to have babies, somewhere along the line, somebody should have taught you that you don't get pregnant by shopping at Walmart. You don't get pregnant by going to the shoe store. You get pregnant from one thing and one thing only. And if that's not clear to you by the time you're in your 20s and 30s, then there's an exceptional problem going on here. But to use abortion as a form of birth control because of irresponsible behavior is not acceptable. To use the miracle of procreation of life to develop human life, and also the understanding that when human life is created, there's a soul associated with that new life, and to abort it is, well, anyway, I think you understand the picture. And if not, then certainly we have a difference of opinion. But for women to continue using abortion as a method of birth control is simply incorrect. Another undebatable fact is that the guy who is allegedly occupying the White House right now, some people call him Joe Biden, is not Joe Biden. The guy you see on TV is not Joe Biden. That's an undebatable, undisputable fact. And now, the reason I'm saying non-debatable is because what the woke community wants you to do is to get into some kind of a debate. No, there's no debate. In fact, there's an old expression, don't argue with an idiot lest you look like one. And that's the whole point, is to get all these talk show hosts out there arguing these points and bringing guests on that are, and then arguing with them. It's like parents arguing with the school board. Don't argue with the school board member, just get your kids out of there. Because, you know, they're going to do it behind your back. They're going to go after your kids and turn them into little whatever. So don't imagine that you're going to go to a school board and get them to change their policies. You just get your kids out of there. And as I say, so there's no debate. There's no debate. There's no discussion. The kids just aren't going to go to this school anymore. And that puts a big burden on the parents. You're paying for this school. You're paying for this service. Half to 50% of the taxes of your house go towards that educational system. But if you enter into a debate with a school board that's out of their minds, then it, the old expression applies. Don't argue with an idiot because lest you look like one. Don't argue with a narcissist lest you become one. See, you're playing into the game, and that's what they want. See, that is the hook. That's what they want. And this is why feminism is breaking down. You see the pendulum swinging back. You see women on the internet coming out and saying feminism is destroying women, not helping them. It has not helped women at all over the decades and decades, the half of a century since feminism came in. It's only become part of destroying women. I use this example. I went to a restaurant in the United States, and it was a nice restaurant. It was one of these with an old theme, but a very nice restaurant, high-end restaurant. And so I go back to the bathroom, and there's two bathrooms, and they're both marked him, her, I don't know what it's, you know, it's set on the door. But unisex bathrooms, okay, so you can go into either one. So I go into one, and it was, like, trashed. There was pee all over the place. It was like, ooh, okay, I'll try the other one. I go into the other one, and it wasn't as bad. But it was like, okay, I got to pee. I'm standing in all of this pee. But I thought to myself, now, women are much more careful when they go to the bathroom than men. So the benefit now of having unisex, women are the same as men, bathrooms is that now women and their little girls have to go into a bathroom where men peed all over the place. Disgusting. This is what women have gained, and this is like everything else. That's just an example of what women have lost because of, you know, the idea that women and men are all the same. It's a philosophical concept that simply does not work. And once again, this is not debatable. Have women gained prominence because now they get to share the bathroom with men? No, it's disgusting. Women should have their own bathroom. And there are very good sanitary reasons for that, because women tend to take much better care of the bathroom when they're using it and when they leave than men do. So it's not debatable. This is not a debate. There's no question. There's nothing to argue here. It's simply a fact. Okay, on to the next non-debatable fact, and that is very simply that the earth is round. Now, once again, what they want to get you into is some kind of a dialogue or debate or ongoing, oh, well, this you could see from Paris to New York, and it's a straight line, and no. There's no discussion. The world is round. Anybody with any half a brain since the time of the Greeks understands that the earth is a globe. It's round. And you can measure it, just like the room that you're in. You can measure it with a tape measure. You're in your room, you can take a tape measure, and to the accuracy of your tape measure, you can measure the dimensions of the room you're in, the width, the length, and the height, if you'd like. You can measure it. You can easily measure the circumference, the diameter of the earth. It's something that you can measure. It's not debatable. It's not something that's open for debate. But see, this is part of the CIA plan to destroy science, to throw everything and anything into question for reasonable people so that kids grow up not knowing what way is up or down. And that's the purpose of the entire program of silent weapons for quiet wars, was to destroy the ability of youth to logically reason. And now we're in our third generation, and you have generations of teachers coming along teaching kids who have no ability to reason. All they can do is repeat something. It's absurd. But once again, a non-debatable fact. Another non-debatable fact is that the universe is infinite in extent. Now understand that, what does infinite mean? Infinite means that relative to our ability to measure, we are not able to measure the extent of it. Because every time we build another bigger telescope, the Hubble, the James Webb telescope, and there will be more, bigger ones, more powerful, that with the previous set of photographic plates of the universe, you know, you looked out into the universe and you could see certain things. And there were black areas, completely black. So they took one of these black areas and they focused the Hubble telescope on it for an extended recording. And after the data came back, there's billions of galaxies in this dark spot, which was previously believed to be a dark spot, the so-called edge of the universe. So understand that the human mind is finite. It doesn't understand things like infinity. There was a great mathematician called George Cantor. When I was in college, I took a course on infinities. George Cantor was the master of understanding infinities. And so the idea that something is infinite, basically the human mind simply can't comprehend the concept of infinity. So, for example, in mathematics, there are equations that have infinite number of terms in them, and those terms have a finite value. And when you add them all together, you get a finite number. Well, how could that be possible? How could you possibly add together an infinite number of things and have it result in a finite number? Well, in mathematics, the entire study of recurring equations or mathematical analysis, understanding equations that have, when you sum them, some of them have infinite sums and some do not. So let's go back to this idea of an infinite universe. Now let's imagine, as the devil's advocate, just imagine someday that man builds a telescope, the ultimate space telescope, covers the entire surface of the moon, looking out into deep space. And they get to a point and they say, there's nothing beyond this. Our big telescope has seen farther than the James Webb telescope. It's farther than the Hubble. We've seen what we consider the known universe. We've mapped it. We have it in our database. But at a certain point, we're not seeing anything else. And so the idea is that, we must have come to the edge of the universe. Well, there's always a bigger telescope. There's always a telescope with better resolution. So you really can't say that. You can say we have come to gaps in the universe, but you can't say that there was some kind of infinite gap that goes to infinity, because you can never build a telescope that will see to infinity. Let's take another example here. Now, there's a paradox, which is a mystery. That's another term for a mystery in astronomy. And it says the following, that if there's an infinite number of stars and galaxies in the universe, then that should completely fill all of space. There should not be a gap in outer space that is not filled by some star or galaxy, some light coming from something or quasar, whatever. And that, therefore, all of the heavens, if you look up at the heavens at night and see this light, there should be just like an even glow all around the universe, around the night sky. Therefore, you could say that with the paradox, they would say, okay, well, that indicates that there's an infinite number of stars. But the problem is, going back to the mathematical equation, if the density of stars, if the spacing between stars is such that the sum of light coming to Earth is not infinite, then your equation breaks down. It's just like the infinite sum that has an infinite number of terms, but comes out to a finite sum. It's exactly the same situation. So that paradox does not work, and it's widely repeated, even with professional astronomers. It's simply not true because of the way mathematics works. So you really don't know. So the only thing we're left with is that relative to our ability to measure, the universe is infinite. Okay, and so now the next situation is that, and this is the undebatable, something that cannot be argued. There's no debate here. It's simply a fact. Now, the Big Bang cosmology is completely incorrect. And that's because the pillars of this 100-year-old phony cosmology simply are non-existent. For example, there's supposedly a microwave background radiation that microwave satellites have been sent up, the COBE satellite, etc., and others, and they look out from the region of our planet here, and they see a microwave background radiation, and that amounts to a couple degree signature, black body signature, allegedly from the original explosion of the Big Bang. It was theorized. The only problem is our planet is surrounded by a dust and gas cloud. It's held back by solar wind pressure, and you can see these around other nearby stars. All of the stars have these clouds surrounding them, and you can see the microwave background radiation signature around all of these other stars. So all they're seeing is a signature from this nebular ion cloud, which I predicted in my work back in the 1970s. It was a major component of my work, also proving that the microwave background radiation has nothing to do with the Big Bang. So pillar number one falls. The redshift that's being used as an interpretation of distance is claiming that quasars are at the farthest edge of the solar system, and you get all of this bizarre physics when you interpret the redshift as having a significance in measuring distance. It's simply not true either. The real story is that the redshifts they're observing are due to the induced electric dipole redshift, a theoretical concept that I developed. You can show this in a laboratory. So the use of redshift as a distance to foreign objects in outer space is incorrect. It's not debatable. It is simply incorrect. But in the political world of science, sorry, reality has no place. So anyway, and I could go on and on about the Big Bang, but the end result is that the other component of this, by the way, is general relativity. General relativity is false. And that is, Einstein understood this himself. He made this criticism himself. of general relativity. General relativity was pushed through by Arthur Eddington as a way of becoming famous and wealthy. But Eddington's experiment, where he took a picture of stars supposedly moving inwards around a solar eclipse back in the early 1900s, was a faked experiment. He cherry-picked the data and really falsified the data, and that has never been redone. So general relativity, which is another cornerstone of the Big Bang concept, is simply false, and yes, there are no such things as black holes. There are supermassive objects, but no black holes either. These are non-debatable facts. Man has been on this planet for hundreds of thousands of years and has had many advanced civilizations in his current form. And so, anyway, that's another undebatable fact. This idea that man crossed over the Bering Strait and populated the North America, then Central America, Mexico, Central America, and then Peru is absurd, because there were people living in South America long before that land bridge ever existed. So anyway, the whole history of man is really bogus. What they teach you in school, completely bogus, undebatable facts. Okay, could primitive man have created nuclear weapons? And I don't have an answer to this right now. It's something that I'm actually looking on. Of course, my advanced physics degree is in nuclear and solid-state physics. And so I have a good background understanding of nuclear physics. Let's just put it that way. So the question is, could primitive man have developed nuclear weapons or nuclear capability, in fact? So that's a double question, and I don't have an answer to that. So that'll be something I'll possibly release somewhere in the future, but I won't be releasing any things on anything on how to do it or the methods, but just the idea that could it have been done without modern technologies. And also, here's another one. Could man have spent a good part of his history in outer space through these decades, these millennia, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of years? Could man have spent part of his existence in outer space? And my very last undebatable fact is that the CIA has run the White House and the American government for decades, before John Kennedy was assassinated by the CIA, no question about that, along with the mafia, along with the other entities that were involved in that time. But the CIA had the primary role in assassinating John Kennedy, no question about it, an undebatable fact. Getting back to the realm of science, planets form because large comets attract material as they discharge the solar capacitor and work their way into the solar system into circularized orbits using the tail drag of the comets. That's how it works. Hale-Bopp was one of the more recent new members of our solar system, which is in the process of forming a planet. So, comets are not dirty snowballs. These are undebatable facts, very well known by people who understand science. And of course, if you wanted to debate this, you might get on the air with some tier two NASA skinny little Thai scientist, but there's no debate, because all they can do is repeat what their textbook says. They can't tell you anything about comets. They really have never measured anything relative to comets. NASA's never really had real probes that go to comets, that do real measurements, that look for real understanding of what's going on with the comet. NASA has never done that. So it's not a debatable issue. It's simply a stated fact. The comets are not dirty snowballs. They're the plasma discharge of the solar capacitor. And the large comets are gaining mass and have the potential to become planets and moons of the solar system, although those events are rare. And in history, we have the ancients describing these events in great detail, the most recent being the capture and the comet Venus, Quetzalcoatl, as the Mayans called it, becoming a planet. Now the planet Venus, a hot, steaming volcanic planet that is in the process of cooling down to become another terrestrial planet. Okay, so at any rate, these are unquestionable, non-debatable items. And if anybody wants to debate them, all they want to do is get you into some kind of a row and then divert the topic. So when you tell people the topics are non-debatable, that's because they are sound, they are well understood, and there's nothing to debate. Okay, so just a minute left here of this show. I want to talk about my water filters. We have a sale going on right now, the MR5 whole house water filter, which, a non-debatable fact, it's the best filter on the planet. It's the only thing like it. There's nothing like it at all. A two-stage filter, five big filter elements that give you the 15 gallon per minute flow rate, exceptional filters, and they're on sale for hundreds of dollars off, so go to my webpage to understand what's really going on. And this sale is going to end on the 30th of April. So that's the 30th of April. This sale is going to end. Go to the webpage, JMCC Water Filters. And my new book is on sale, also listing a lot of undisputable facts about the history of the solar system and Earth and man. It's called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. It's available on my website and also on Amazon in print form. So once again, The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. And then, of course, make sure you read all my other books because they're in a series. Once again, the water filter page, go there, take part in that sale that's going on for the MR5, is jmccwaterfilters.com. And thank you for listening. I made it through this show. I'm not sure how with my voice fumbling here, but I've had this kind of like cough thing going on for a number of weeks. Hopefully we'll be rid of it by the time next week rolls around. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.